it to ignore. And I know too much to go back and pretend. 'Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever gonna keep me down again. Oh, yes, I'm wise, but it's wisdom for the pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong. It only serves to make me more determined to achieve my final goal. And I come back even stronger, not a novice any longer, 'cause you deepen the conviction in my soul. Oh, yes, I'm wise, but it's wisdom for the pain. Yes, I pay the price, but look how much I
Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. My name is Joe Griffey. Here with my partners, Ralph Galati, Air Force POW, Bill Davenport, Marine, Vietnam veteran, and Logan Runyon, our producer. And Libby, are you with us?
I'm here, Joe. How are you?
Libby Hevick, how are you doing, my friend? I love talking to you. Let me tell you something. I could talk to you forever. You're such a nice, nice lady and so full of a lot of spirit. And everything else. And we're here kind of today to talk about your documentary that you did about your mom and dad and the donut dollies. And we're going to have Richard Silverman on in a little bit. And how do you feel about, how does it make you feel about bragging about your mom and all?
I absolutely love it. I got to say, I love in your email that you sent out that you had listed. You said that I was had told the story about my donut dolly Vietnam veteran mom and my helicopter Vietnam veteran dad, but especially saying that my Vietnam veteran mom, because reason I made the documentary.
Wait, hold on,
Libby.
Ralph, you're a Vietnam veteran, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
Bill, you're a Vietnam veteran, correct?
Yep.
I'm a Vietnam veteran. If I had to take a vote, whose vote? Would we look at donut dollies as Vietnam veterans, Ralph and Bill?
Certainly.
Sure. Anybody that served over there in a patriotic fashion deserves it.
Right. Well, there's another way, too, Ralph. Anybody that went there, when they went there, they were making less than $200 a month. you at least got to get a title, you know, because you want to get a lot of money. Libby, you live in Virginia, correct?
That's correct.
Your mom is where? Colorado? Out west?
No, my parents are they're in Utah.
Utah?
Now. Yeah, they were living in Idaho. They live in Utah.
Do you talk to your mom often?
Oh, yes. In fact, she was trying to call while I was on hold.
Oh,
I had to text her, say, I'm going on the radio show.
Well, I don't want to be newsy or personal. Was it important that you think your mother had something important to tell you?
No, I think she wanted to know what time I was going on the radio with you.
Wait a minute. Hold on a minute. Logan, is there somebody that just called in? Yeah, bring that person up. So, excuse me. Somebody's trying to get on our show. I don't know who it is. Hello?
It's me. It's her mom, Diane.
Hello, Diane.
I had to call her to tell her that Logan had called me, and well, I didn't know she was going on today, but I was trying to tell her that they were trying to call her, and they called me instead. Anyway, I'm here.
And how is Ben doing?
He's doing great. He's here, too. He'll be here in just a minute. If you want to talk to both of us, that would be great.
Yeah, we're going to leave you on, and we're going to have a friend of yours on. Later on.
Oh?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Well, who was a dear friend? Can you name a dear friend of yours? I'm sure you have many, but who was a real close friend of yours and been a friend of yours your whole life that you were in Vietnam with?
That I was in my... Betsy Tanner was unit director at Camp Eagle.
She was one of them.
And I bet that.
Wait a minute. How about if I told you she met her husband in Vietnam, and she pinned her dad, who's a colonel in Vietnam.
Oh, Terry Fisk Herman.
Terry Herman. Yeah. Terry Herman.
Terry Herman.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I'm going through the internet this morning, and I said to my wife, I must have got 50 different emails, clippings of donut dollies from friends of ours. And I said to my wife, my God. Look how beautiful these girls were. I don't know how Hollywood allowed you to get out of the United States instead of taking you guys to Hollywood. You, Terry Harmon, Mrs. Herman. I mean, right down the list, the whole line of them. My God. Terry Harmon.
Well, Herman.
My, no, there's a Terry Harmon and a Terry Herman.
Yes,
now, Diane, it took you all week to get that straightened. Don't confuse me.
That's
Terry
true.
Harmon.
That's true.
Terry Harmon is, my God, she
I
don't
know.
She was, my God, so beautiful. All of you, though. And I can see why. The Vietnam veterans always remembered you and always held you in special, you know, in a special way. Just totally incredible. I know I'll hear from Terry tomorrow when she hears this show. We're big fans of hers, and she listens, and Erin Miller, her granddaughter, who got their grandmother, Elaine Harmon, buried in Arlington, and Terry met her husband in Vietnam, and he was Marine, and they got married. And do you have any idea, Diane, how many donut dollies served, around 700?
There were 627, right, Libby?
That is correct.
In Vietnam.
Any idea how many of them met their husbands who got married?
No.
Well, everyone we've had on our show, we've had 40 donut dollies on the show. They all met their husbands, in Vietnam. I would say a good percentage of them, you know.
Yeah, well, have you talked to Doris Houston?
I know Doris's name.
Doris Houston and Bill met also at Camp Eagle. He was a JAG officer, a lawyer there, and my husband was in combat. He was a reconnaissance platoon leader with the 2nd and 67th Cav. But when we met, he had been brought up to division headquarters and was flight standardization instructor pilot, which meant that he instructed instructor pilots and did all the safety checks and everything. And that's where we met at
Diane,
Camp Eagle.
Diane, how is your husband? How's your health?
Well, it's pretty good. I've had two back surgeries and I'm 4 brain surgeries, but I've still got my mind. We're doing okay. We're so far so good.
Washington should realize when they don't consider the donut dollies veterans and give them benefits, they should realize that when they dumped sprayed Agent Orange on us, nowhere in that formula of dioxide that they mixed together with diesel to spray on us did it say, oh, don't land on the donut dollies. They're not veterans. Just land on the veterans and the South Vietnamese people. And I think, I think one of the biggest crimes of our country is that we overlooked the health of our donut dollies. And a lot of women that volunteered, nurses, that might not have had veteran status.
The nurses were the real heroes. They saw the worst of the worst.
Oh, wait a minute, Diane. Wait a minute. From what I understand, every donut dolly saw more combat than 50% of the veterans in Vietnam. Your means of transportation was a helicopter.
The nurses saw the results of that combat, and we were non-combatants. We came under fire a lot.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Non-combatant is a term that the Pentagon gave you, so they wouldn't have to give you combat pay, and they didn't want the public to think that they were putting them in. Ralph, would you agree?
It just meant they got to do that and
that they weren't in a bad, dangerous era. What moron? And I hate to use that word, but what moron in the White House or the Pentagon thought of sending 20, 21, 22-year-old young women, made them wear a dress, loafers, or sneakers during the monsoons, during a war going on, that we had casualties, hundreds of casualties every week, 59,000 almost died in 10 years, and we send these young, beautiful women over there to give out Kool-Aid? I mean,
no.
Ralph, how do you explain that?
It's not explainable, but you got to, at the time, we were making such stupid decisions anyway. That was just another one on top of all the other ones that we made. And we put them in harm's way and really gave them no training and no support. And then when we came back, we gave them no recognition at all. So, you know, it was bad from beginning to end.
Yeah. But Diane.
But also, you have to, Joe.
Go ahead.
You have to understand that what's so amazing about these Red Cross women, these donut dollies, because though they ended up in dangerous circumstances, I don't know many that said, like, that's it, I'm out of here. They were like, well, I'm here to help these guys because they have to be here. So I'm here for them to bring them some morale, uplift their morale, and show them that someone from home cares about them and loves them. And you know, one of the donut dollies during the documentary, she said something, Sue Smith, she had said, every time a person does something truly caring, that's so important for helping us to rise above the difficulties that we all have to face, and every one of us can do that. But these women did do that. Every one of us has the potential to do that, but, like, the donut dollies did do that, and that's what makes them so incredibly special. And then you're right, they came back, and they still are not considered military veterans, and that's what inspired me to make the documentary, because Mom was rejected on an honor flight because she wasn't a military veteran.
And
I'm like, well, no one knows what they did, and she served for 8 years.
They do now, though, Libby, thanks to you.
They do know, thanks to Libby. But listen, Diane, we got to go to a break in a minute, and we got to bring up Richard Silverman, and we have a couple other people that are going to come up. But I want to ask you one fast question. You were required to wear nylons or stockings, whatever the hell you want to call them.
No.
Oh, it wasn't?
Not at all.
You didn't have to wear them?
No, bare legs.
Yeah, I mean, how
well, early on, I thought some of the other donut dollies had said they had early on.
Yeah.
But, no, and with our dress uniforms, which we traveled in from the United States.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But no, not. No, uh-uh.
What, let me, one last question.
Okay.
And please tell Ben we said hello. What was more comfortable in the monsoons in the mud, your loafers or your sneakers?
I never wore sneakers in Vietnam.
No, but you were allowed to, though, weren't you?
Not when I was there. We just had the black loafers. In fact, they weren't even loafers. They were just flat, as far as I remember.
Boy, I can imagine it didn't take long of raining before then the water was just overflowing into your loafer.
Well, I was, by the time the monsoons hit Camp Eagle, which was really bad, Ben was still there, I was down south in Nha Trang and Phanrang. So I didn't have it bad in the monsoons, but the night that I spent on Firebase Rendezvous at the Ashaw Valley, because we were under attack from a North Vietnamese battalion, they put us in a cave overnight. And then
no two or three star hotels to put you up in, no Holiday Inn.
There's a picture in the documentary, I think, of that Betsy just took from the helicopter of me being helped down the hill to the helicopter pad, and the next morning with my rain slicker on and a GI on either side of me, and that was a lot of mud. But
we have mud all over your feet.
Yeah, listen, we gotta go to a break. We just want to bring you up and say hello to you, and
because thank you very much,
Diane. It's all about you and Ben. You know, it's not about me or Bill or Ralph or Richard or Libby. It's about you guys.
Let me give you another plug. We are currently involved with a man out here in Salt Lake who does podcasts with veterans, and Ben has had his on the air on YouTube, and mine's coming up soon, and then he's going to do one of, and that's about our experiences in Vietnam separately, and then he's going to do a podcast with the two of us about our love story. Anyway, the name of it is Curious Humanography.
Listen, we got to get a little break. Libby, stay
there.
Very
kind.
Diane,
right.
God bless
you.
We love you. All right, we'll talk to you soon. You listen to Welcome Home Show.
Welcome back, everybody, as we do each week, and today being Sunday, March 15th, we announced the birthdays and the casualties by number on the Vietnam Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C., Wildwood, New Jersey, and now probably over two dozen other locations throughout the country, some even full size, which is fabulous. Today there'll be 141 birthdays, two of those from New Jersey. Casualties will be 176, with nine from New Jersey. Several local names: James Bigenheimer, United States Marine Corps, born March 15th, 1971. He died August 19th, 1947. He's from Atlantic City. He'll be 23 forever. John R. Morvay, United States Navy. He's born March 17th, 1947. And he died October 23rd, 1967. He's from Ocean City. And the American Legion Post 524 carries his name along with Miley and Cruz. So it's the Morvay, Miley, Cruz, Post 524 in Ocean City. Very active and well-run post. A young man that I knew as a child and through high school, Rodney L. Stinson, United States Marine Corps, born March 16th, 1947. He died August 23rd, 1967. He was from Wildwood. The sad part there is a 16-year-old cousin was the one that, a female cousin, was the one that answered the knock on the door. It stays with her in her entire life. Rodney will be 20 forever. One of our Coast Guard losses, one of the seven Coast Guard losses, Jerry Phillips, United States Coast Guard, born March 13, 1939. He died August 11, 1966. He was a career Coast Guardsman. He's from Corpus Christi, Texas. He'll be 27 forever. Just want to make a quick note. Yesterday, I was at North Wildwood St. Patty's Day. Our VFW Post 5941 led the parade. Had about 400 participants, maybe 1,000 on the street. A little windy, nice sunny day, though. A lot of Irish people. So it's good to see the season, the parade season, the summer season start to open up on the Wildwoods Island.
Libby, can you tell us the purpose of why our show is today? And you did a documentary about your mom and dad and the donut dollies, correct?
I did, yeah. And I wanted to tell their story again. My mom was rejected from an honor flight because she wasn't a military veteran. And so I thought people don't understand their story and they need to. So I made this documentary and I'm trying to tell the world, and it's been so well received. I've won many awards. In fact, this week we just found out we were nominated for three awards from the Nova International Film Fest, and we've won some other awards from some other fests. But just the Military Women's Memorial in Arlington National Cemetery has done an honor event to recognize the donut dollies and is registering them as many as they can get. They want to register them all into the archives at the Military Women's Memorial, and just trying to get these women seen and let them know, hey, you matter and your service mattered. And I'm sorry that you're not considered military veterans, but your service really matters. And that's what's so incredible about Richard reaching out to me after you forwarded my documentary, an early copy of my documentary you sent to Richard Silverman, who reached out and said, hey, I want to make the donut dollies, but especially your parents' love story, because, you know, meeting in Vietnam and my helicopter pilot father and my donut dolly mother, and they've now been 56 years next month. They will have been together, and it's a beautiful story, you know, love during war, and the fact that they found each other and they both made it out alive. And telling this story by way of, you know, following my mom and the other donut dollies to help bring the donut dollies even to a bigger screen will just be really, really incredible. And I hope that we can really be their voices for them to shine, so that people do recognize them in their service.
And I'll tell you what, when you want to get a bunch of women together Nobody can do it better than Phyllis Wilson down at the Women's Military Memorial. And that memorial is right at the gates of Arlington. Actually, the back of the building is in Arlington. And that is a building that honors all women that ever had any kind of service in war or during military time. They have a lot of Red Cross. They have a lot of donut dollies. They got a lot of wax, waves, nurses. You got to be, and a lot of soldiers. The founder of that, General, Willie, founded that like in the 1980s. And the building was sitting there empty, and she was able to get the government to make a deal. And they're a 501c. They don't get no government funding. They raise all their funds. And my God, they must have thousands and thousands of women registered just so history will not forget them for the service that they did. Richard Silverman, my friend, what's up?
How are you, Joe? I'm great. How are you?
Not bad. I'm sure you heard that song a million times.
I love that, and thank Colleen for that. That was wonderful.
I will, and Richard, isn't it ironic, and we got Libby's on the phone with us, and we got Ralph Galati, who's a prisoner of war Vietnam veteran, and Bill Davenport's a Marine Vietnam veteran, on. Isn't it, aren't the Oscars tonight?
They're tonight, yeah, and actually...
Wait a minute, our show's going to be on tomorrow. That's just
Well, I'm personally vested only because one of my dearest friends... She's kind of, I think she's got the world record for most nominations for an Academy Award without a victory. Her name is Diane Warren, and she's a very famous songwriter. But Diane is now this year nominated the 17th time for the best song category of an Academy Award, and has yet to win it with some of the most amazing songs of all time. So hopefully, and this year she actually wrote a song for her own documentary about her career, a film called Relentless. So,
who is the lady in the soap operas, All My Children? Susan Lucci.
But Susan Lucci. Susan Lucci beat hands down.
Listen, what I don't understand is, Richard, you got a lot of pull in Hollywood. Why don't you get them to give an Oscar for somebody who's been nominated the most times and didn't win, but that makes them still good enough to work every day.
She got an honorary Oscar last year, just for that exact thing, Joe. So your instincts are 100% correct.
Yeah. Listen, isn't it nice to talk to Libby? I was telling Libby it's really good. We just had her mom on. Actually, we went to call Libby up to get the show started, and I gave her Diane's number, mom's number. So I said, "The hell, let's bring her mother up for a few minutes and thank her, because it's all about, aren't these courageous women, Richard?"
Well, when you first introduced me to Libby and Joe, look, you know, from when I did the film with Morgan and Ed Harris and those folks, and you and I met because of that film, but then our friendship kind of immediately and instantly bonded, and then you've started introducing me to some of the most incredible people I've ever met in my life, and some of the most courageous people I've known, and you know, it's kind of like everything happens for a reason, and one of the people you introduced me to was Libby. Another person you introduced me to was Phyllis Wilson and Kathleen Pearl over at the Women's War Memorial Museum. And they are, you know, as I just heard you say right before you introduced me, incredible women who are honoring other incredible women and kind of the torchbearers of some of these, need-to-know stories about some of the heroism and honoring of, patriotism that these women have portrayed over decades and throughout numerous wars. And Libby's parent story, to me, was doubly incredible, not just because, obviously, her dad, went and served in, frontline, combat as a combat helicopter pilot. And Libby's mom is one of the 600-plus women who volunteered. And that's the thing that blows my mind, right? Just volunteered to spend 1 year, some more, some, stayed longer, in frontline combat to bring morale, to bring a piece of home, to bring a sense of humanity to these young men that were struggling and suffering so far away from home and in the most horrific of circumstances, that these two people in Ben and Diane found each other, fell in love, that love grew out of this horrific circumstance, and that, 50 some odd plus years later, and children and grandchildren and a legacy of just love endures. And I think that's the beautiful part about Libby's parents' story and that message, not just the honoring and the duty and the service and the courage, but that in even the worst circumstances that we can all face, that love and bonding and that human quality can find itself and flourish.
Richard, and good. Richard, do you think Bill and Ralph, I hope I put this the right way. You know, we're watching the bombings now of Iran bombing countries surrounding them, and Israel and the United States bombing Iran, and we see the explosions and the buildings blowing up. That's kind of what we sent the donut dollies into, minus the monsoons.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we dropped a lot of bombs in Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam. We dropped a lot of, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of... Hey, Ralph.
Yeah.
How many... When we were bombing Vietnam, Ralph was a weapon specialist in an F-4 that got shot down. Ralph, how many F-4s would be up like at 12 o'clock in the afternoon at the same time flying?
I would try to say dozens and dozens of four ships. So, you know, usually went up in groups of four. And, you know, we had probably 20 bases between South Vietnam and Laos and Thailand, you know, and then... To magnify that, in the December of 72 bombings that got us out of the war, we were sending 50 to 100 B-52s a night, each one dropping 100 bombs. So it's pretty mean stuff.
And we don't, I don't mean to distract anything, but a thought just came up. Bill and I were talking. We lost 6 soldiers the other day on refueling?
I think it was total, 6 on a KC-135, a refueler.
Were there times, Ralph, that you refueled in the sky because you wanted to carry less fuel and more bombs?
We refueled in every mission. Matter of fact, you took off, you regrouped in a group of four, and the first thing you do was go to refuel.
Wait a minute.
You didn't have enough fuel to make it to your target and back.
I have to get gas on my way home. So I pull into a gas station, and if there's lines ahead of me, I just get in line, and as cars get their gas, they drive away, you pull up closer. Can you describe briefly for us your pilot? William says, hey, Ralph, we got to get refueled. Or maybe you tell him. I don't know who watches the gauges. Tell him what happens when you're on your way. Do you have to call a tanker in the sky, or do you know where they're at, or how's that work?
Yeah, they sit out in certain positions, and we know where they are. And the first thing you do is you get vectored right to them. And then the challenge is, you know, you're flying at 350 or 400 knots, and they're kind of cruising at 280 to 300, and you got to intercept them and then slow down and pull up behind them, and then you do your refueling 1, 2, 3, 4, and then number one again, and you pull off, and they do this all day and all night for every four ship that's up there.
But wait a minute,
until they run out of gas.
Ralph, when you pull up to get behind tanker number one, do you have to wait, or do you just go right and refuel and leave, or is there?
Well, you're pulling up as a four ship, and then number one will go in first.
Okay.
First of our four F4s, and then when they top off, they pull away. Number two comes up, number three, number four, and then believe it or not, number one has to go back in again because he's burned up too much gas.
Okay. How much fuel would your F4 hold?
I can max out about 15 or 20,000 pounds.
Okay.
It's measured in pounds, not gallons.
Okay. How many pounds of oil or diesel or whatever it was, gasoline, would that tanker be holding when it's off the ground?
A couple hundred thousand pounds. It's amazing.
And you're like,
and you got to realize when they're sitting up there,
and you're a big target
now at Rotorant or Iraq, wherever the hell they're living. I mean, they're just floating up there pretty much unattended. And, you know, accidents happen, which is what this was. But they're usually the most exposed in the combat area because they're up there just circling and circling at fairly low speeds.
Well, But anyway, Richard, and Libby, pretty interesting, isn't it? I mean, and Ralph, from what I understand is some of them tankers were from the Vietnam War that they're using.
It wouldn't surprise me if some of them the old KC-135s. That would not surprise me.
That's what
so
crashed.
There's not many left.
Yeah, Ralph, that's what crashed the other day, a KC-135.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah. So anyway, Richard, you fell in love with Libby, with Phyllis Wilson, of course, Paul is your first love. What caught your eye about making this into a love movie?
Well, I think it, you know, for lack of better terms, and I kind of hate when people go, it's a little bit of this meets a little bit of that meets a little bit of this, but it does give people a general context of the kind of, you know, zeitgeist and kind of feel of a project. But to me, this is a little bit of, you know, The Notebook meets Good Morning Vietnam meets Apocalypse Now. It is a little bit of the absurdity of war, the horror of war, and the beauty of a relationship kind of born out of that moment that was kind of, you know, unpredictable. And I think that, from an audience standpoint, makes for a great story. But I think also the historical aspect of educating people. You know, I love projects of purpose, Joe. Something that kind of opens up people's hearts and minds and educates them a little bit at the same time. And this story definitely does that. And there are so many, as you alluded to earlier, stories of these women of valor and courage and who have done service for this country but are not recognized for doing so because, you know, as I'm sure Libby has mentioned, you know, these 600-plus women came in under a Red Cross program, not the U.S. military. And a lot of this, and Libby did a beautiful and award-winning now, congratulations to Libby, documentary about her mother and the Donut Dollies. And, you know, I think for Libby, it became even more of a lightning rod of a story when her dad was offered a honor flight back to Arlington, and he wanted to have Diane accompany him, and she was told that, you know, she can't, you know, be given a seat when she and the other Donut Dollies saw more frontline action than maybe 20 or 30% of the enlisted that were sent to Vietnam. And basically were at those frontline locations witnessing the horrors of war in a little blue dress, tennis shoes, and you know, basically, you know, armed with, you know, game boards and guitars and song sheets.
Listen,
an incredible story.
We got to go to a break. I want to bring you guys back over on the other side. Then we're going to have a little surprise for Libby and maybe you, Richard. But I had the honor of interviewing Adrian. We had the honor on this show of interviewing Adrian Cronauer three or four times before he passed away a couple of years ago. And that movie, Good Morning Vietnam, with the late Robert Williams, added humor. You know, if we don't have some humor in the war, what's the use of fighting it? The humor is what makes us want to fight the war, win the war, so we bring more humor to that country when we bring peace to it. And I think that's what Robert Williams was trying to get his point across in that movie and Adrian Cronauer. You know, I'm sure there were humorous times with Ben and Diane, and that's what made it all worthwhile. They wanted to live, they wanted to serve their country, but they wanted to come home and continue that humor without having to fly around in a helicopter. You're listening to the Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. WIBQ 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. We have Libby Hevick, who's on the phone, who did a documentary, and we have Richard Silverman, and Libby's down in Virginia. We have Richard Silverman that's out in Vegas, and he's probably in the top one directors, and just being able to take a thought and a story and make it into a motion picture. He just got done My Dead Friend Zoe, which was a fabulous movie starring Ed Harris and Morgan Freeman, and just a great, great story about two young ladies that come home with the effects of war, and many other movies that he's involved in. But Richard and Libby, I want to say something, and please don't take this the wrong way. Libby, you did a documentary on the donut dollars in Vietnam, correct?
Yes.
You were never in Vietnam, correct?
No.
So you did, you have a lot of hearsay interviewing donut dollars, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Richard, have you ever been to Vietnam?
No.
So you're going to make a movie from the documentary and talking to Libby and talking pretty much, you're going to try and make a love story about Ben and Diane. But you were never in Vietnam, right? But we got to get the audience to convince that we would do such a crazy thing by sending women into a combat zone. And as great as you are, I don't know if you're going to be able to capture what we sent these ladies in to do and what they did when they were there. But what helps to get the audience to believe what Diane and Terry Harmon and Terry Herman and all the women that served, the 628 donut dollies did, is by talking to somebody that was there, correct? They were there.
Yeah, well, I think the answer to that, Joe, would be that, you know, Tom Cruise, who I think is one of the, I'll say he's one of the greatest producers, aside from being an actor, but finding amazing stories, telling amazing stories in amazing ways. When he did, you know, Born on the 4th of July, obviously he had never been to Vietnam. He did not fight in a war. But if you think about those type of stories, it takes you from a small town kid, high school football hero, all-American kid, just living a life. And then what happens to a person, male, female, regardless, when they're thrown into a inhumane and chaotic.
Okay, now the point I'm trying to make, the point I'm trying to make is, it really helps if you had people that were in Vietnam trying to explain what it was really like. And I think,
oh, of course, well, that's what folks like you and
I want to introduce you to somebody.
On the phone with us are,
I want to introduce you to somebody. I'm fine to bring up Terry Herman. Are you with us?
I am.
Have you ever been to Vietnam?
Oh, there you go.
Terry, have you?
Hey, Terry.
See, Joe, I thought you were just challenging us.
No, I set you up. Terry, have you ever been to Vietnam?
Yes, I have.
When were you there? A vacation
there,
a couple years ago?
July of 69 to July of 70.
And how old were you?
I was 20 years old.
And what the hell were you doing in Vietnam? Were you going to the Virgin Islands or
no.
San Juan and the plane got lost? What were you doing in Vietnam? Why did you go to Vietnam and what were you doing there?
I signed up with the Red Cross to be a donut dolly in Vietnam.
Okay. All right. We got all that. Okay. You go to Vietnam. Do you know Diane, Libby's mom?
I know Diane, and I know her husband, Ben.
Okay. Wait a minute, Terry. Where did you meet them? What did you meet them a couple of years ago? Where did you meet Diane at?
I met Diane and Ben at Camp Eagle with the 101st Airborne Division in Vietnam in 1969. He was with Mom when Mom met Dad. Yes.
We might as well say now, your husband, Jerry. What's your husband's name, Terry?
Jerry.
Jerry. you met him in Vietnam.
Yep, I did.
Wait a minute. Who did you pin the Lieutenant Colonel pin on in Vietnam?
My dad.
Did all your relatives, Terry, go to Vietnam? Did anybody stay the hell home and like pay the bills and, you know?
My mom stayed home and my younger brother was still in high school, so neither of them were in Vietnam. And my sister was at the University of Nebraska marching against the war.
Well, you covered all aspects of it. Your dad, Richard, I don't know if you ever talked to Terry. You may. You probably have.
I have not. Well, this is a treat.
No, I'll tell you a real treat. Your husband is a Marine, correct? Or was he Army?
No, Army.
He was Army, and your dad was Army.
Correct.
Okay. Did your dad ever live during a war that he didn't want to go to? Did your dad go to World War II?
My dad was in the 10th Mountain Division in World War II.
Okay, did your dad ever go to Korea?
Yes, he was in Korea as well.
What the hell was he doing in Korea? Did he go in the Army?
He was a career Army officer.
Now, Richard and Libby, I asked Terry, and Libby was kind enough to give me Terry's information. I called her, and I said to Terry, Richard, was your dad upset? Now, your dad's a full burr colonel. He fought in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. Bill, that's a rarity.
Yeah, the timing has to be just right.
Yeah, and it did. I said, Terry, was your dad mad when you got to Vietnam? Terry, who got to Vietnam first, you or your dad?
I did. I was there first.
By how much time?
About a month and a half.
So I guess he couldn't send you home, could he, or stop you from going, could he?
No. And he wouldn't have.
No, I was just going to ask you, do you think he wouldn't? I doubt it very much. He had to be so proud of you. So how did it come around? Your dad gets promoted to a colonel. Who pinned him?
I pinned the colonel wings on him, and they flew me down in a chopper from Camp Eagle to Da Nang to do that.
So doesn't everybody go by helicopter? You know,
we pretty much did.
Yeah, so it was no big deal flying in a helicopter down your dad. It was a big deal pinning your dad and seeing your dad. But getting on a helicopter was kind of normal for Donut Dollies, wasn't it?
Yeah, I logged about 300 hours in helicopters over there.
I'm sure a lot of people have done that, Terry. I mean, come on, 300 hours
in a
combat zone. Do you ever remember getting shot at?
No. Well, yes. On one of the fire bases, we had incoming, and we also had incoming at Camp Eagle, so we had to go in the bunkers or in the top command out on the fire base.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so, yes, I do remember those things.
How do you feel about Richard and Libby wanting to do a motion picture movie, a love story, and... So you,
you know
Ben and Diane for 55, 56 years.
Right? I do.
Yeah, 56 years. Hey, Joe, can I say something
about
Terry and her dad? This is just really wonderful. My mom was stationed further south after Camp Eagle. And mom went on a temporary assignment months later and saw Terry, not at Camp Eagle either. And they got to talking, and mom was engaged to dad by then. And Terry's dad was able to arrange for my mom and dad to take R&R together because they were stationed in two different places and everything like that. So Terry's dad helped them be able to go on R&R together.
Terry, how is your health today?
Oh, my health is excellent.
Because you were there with Agent Orange and, you know, all the other diseases.
I had breast cancer, but kicked it. And I know a lot of Donut Dollies who've had various cancers, but I don't know that we're different than the average, you know.
Now, did you have to get your shots when you went to Vietnam, like the soldiers did?
Oh, yeah. But I'm an Army brat, so I had to get shots everywhere we went.
Yeah. And how about, did you have to take the malaria pills?
Oh, those wonderful malaria pills that we took every day, and then another one once a week, yes.
Yeah, that's it. We took it on Monday. Actually, nobody took that big Mike and Ike. We used to have our lieutenant out in the field. We'd give it to us in a pond and watch us swallow it. Because they were horrible and they stayed with you and they didn't make you feel good. And I think it was for Richard. I think that pill was for leprosy. So they shouldn't send. Do you think we should not send people into an area that they got to give them medication because leprosy is abundant? I just, what we did to our teenagers, men and women, I'll never get over. Richard, we got to get a little break real fast. I want to promise I'm only going to keep you just a few more minutes on the other side. Stay where you're at. We're going to take a 2-minute break and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Welcome Home Show. Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Richard, the mic is yours. Tell us what you would like to do, what kind of love story. I mean, we talked the other day about Ollie McGraw, was it? Or who was Ryan? They did the original love story years and years ago.
And I think, you know, Libby and I have spent quite a bit of time, you know, ideating together and talking together, and Libby's been, you know, educating me on Diane and Ben and, you know, their story and the nuances of their time, you know, before meeting one another, getting to Vietnam, and then once they met one another. And I think that, you know, kind of beginning, middle, and end of this story, in the end, it is, you know, as I've mentioned a few different times, the beautiful human aspect of, you know, that love overcomes and love survives, even the worst of circumstances. But then it's also the, you know, educating of a public, of honoring what these women did, you know, what that volunteer service meant, and what their role truly was. And, you know, there are so many kind of, you know, the fact that, you know, both Terry and Diane ended up having a beautiful love story born out of this. There's a lot of misnomers also that, you know, these women were going there, you know, for, you know, other reasons, and which is just ridiculous. And,
yes,
and if you even look at the criteria that the Red Cross put at that time, you had to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, Terry and Libby, but I think it was you had to be 21 or over, college educated, and no children. And I knew those are not married at the time. And think about, you know, the mid-late 1960s. That was not a very wide swath of the female demographic in America at that time. So it was a very, you're looking for, you know, a very rare breed of college-educated women in the 60s who were also then not married, okay, and, you know, and no children, and willing to, wanting to, volunteer a year of their lives to go, you know, serve our country. And it is unbelievable, Joe, when you think about, you know, where we put them, under what circumstances we put them. I think it's also part of a miracle that there was not more loss of life amongst this group of women in those circumstances. I think that was just good fortune more than good planning.
I think I have a reason why not that many of them got shot. because they wore a shield around their body, and that was called their smile, that nothing could penetrate that smile, because they went over there, and Terry, I'm sure you'll agree, and Diane would agree, they went over there to show that smile of the mom, of their neighbor, of their sweetheart, of their sister, and to put a smile on our faces. So I think that shield, that smile that just came down around them and protected them from getting hurt, I think that was God's reward to them for doing such a crazy
thing. Well, and I also think those guys appreciated us so much, they would have done anything to protect us.
Libby, we only have a few more minutes left, and we have to bring up, believe it or not, Richard, we're going to, and Terry and Libby, we're going to have on Ken David, who his records in Vietnam got lost, and President Joe Biden 5 years ago awarded him finally his Medal of Honor. And what a humble, humble human being he is. But before we bring Ken up, Libby, where would you like to see this your documentary go? What would you like to see it become?
I'd love to see it help educate generations on these women and what they did, and also getting on the big screen by way of My Parents' Love Story is going to be amazing, and I'm grateful to Richard for helping to do that and just getting them out there. It's currently on YouTube, and PBS, actually the trailer for PBS Virginia BPM is already running, and it's going to start next week, later this month. It's going to start airing on PBS Virginia, and later this year nationally on Virginia. On PBS, it will be available, and I'm so excited. I just really want people to be educated about these women and know what they did.
And we should thank Todd and Sean from the Veterans Breakfast Club. That's one every night from every Monday night from 7 to 8:30. That's where I met you.
They connected us.
Richard, do you know what a great investment would be? Building a Hollywood studio around the Women's Memorial in Arlington. Because I'll tell you what.
Oh, the stories.
There are so many stories waiting to be told.
Well, Joe, I think I shared with you the conversations that Phyllis and Kathleen and I have been having is exactly around that idea. But and I don't like using the term Hollywood studio, because to me this is more of a content creators platform. And when you look at what Libby did, and yes, it was motivated by her parents' story, but she was a creator herself.
Yes.
Saw the story, saw the opportunity to educate people and spread the word, and took it upon herself to go make this on a micro budget. And so many of these stories can be told in that manner. I think, the term I've coined with Kathleen and Phyllis is that we want to kind of assemble these stories under a banner similar to what Tom Hanks and Gary Getzman did with HBO of a Band of Brothers, under a banner of a Band of Sisters, and to tell these stories from the Wax to the Donut Dollies to the women now who are serving frontline. And I think I shared with you another story that developing about the FTPs, which were the female tactical patrol in Afghanistan, and another amazing group of women that helped fight with U.S. service personnel. So what Libby's done in bringing this story to life for parents, I think, is one of so many important stories. And the fact that Libby did this in a way that is also garnering awards at film festivals speaks to the quality of the product as well also.
Well, listen, we got to get going. Terry, Libby, Richard, I love you. It's Richard, this show is open to you and Libby and Terry for anything you want to do, any way we can help. All you got to do is give us a call.
Thank you, Joe. And Terry, it was such a pleasure to meet you, and hopefully I get to talk to you directly sometime soon with Libby.
And Richard, I would never downplay you. I was just setting you up a little bit to let you know that I don't know of another director that will be able to sell this movie better than you, because the audience is going to sit there and watch it and say, we would never do this to these beautiful 19, 20-year-old women, young girls. Nobody would ever do this. You can make non-believers into believers. And with the help of Diane and Terry, it is a believer. It is a believer. And Richard, I don't know if anybody can do it better than you.
Well, thank you, Joe. And you know, it was a pleasure to get to hear your voice again today. And Libby, and you know, everybody else. Hope to talk to you again soon.
And
thank you.
Give Paul a hug for me, and we got to go to a break. We love you guys. Just God bless you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Love you too. Take care. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back. May 7, 1970, while stationed at Fire Base Marine in Thine Province, David's company came under a fierce attack of a large enemy force. The initial assault resulted in the death of the company platoon leader, numerous casualties among the soldiers. Without hesitation, David handed his radio to his platoon sergeant, moved to the defensive perimeter, engaging the enemy with automatic weapons fire. Realizing the danger to the wounded soldiers, David moved outside the perimeter to draw enemy fire away and onto himself to save his comrades. He repeatedly exposed himself to enemy fire, yelling to distract the attackers and allowing the medics to evacuate the injured safely. Despite being wounded himself, David continued to fight using hand grenades and providing cover until the enemy retreated. It's our honor today to have Kevin J. Davis, recipient of the Medal of Honor, on January 3rd, 2025, for his extraordinary heroism during the Vietnam War on May 7th, 1970. Mr. David, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Joe Griffey's here, and Bill Davenport is our partner on the radio show.
Again.
And Bill is a Marine Vietnam veteran, and Ralph Galati. Ralph, are you back on with us?
I am, and I had the honor of speaking with Ken a couple of weeks ago, and it's great to have him back again.
It is.
Welcome.
It is. And just, sir, thank you for your heroism, but mainly for your service.
Hey, Ken, this is Ralph.
Yeah.
Tell the audience, what was your rank when all this happened?
I was only a PFC.
I tell you, isn't that remarkable? I mean, PFC, how many years were you even in the military at that time?
Only, I'd finished up my training of 6 months, and then they sent me over to Vietnam.
So you were less than a year in the military, and here you do these...
Yes.
This remarkable thing. I mean, the Medal of Honor is incredible. So what were you even thinking about at the time, or were you not even thinking? You were just acting.
I did what I was trained to do, and I was just there to protect my fellow comrades.
Audience, Joe, really hears what he's saying. Here's a young guy. What were you, maybe 19 or something like that? Barely in the military, barely an adult, performing miraculous deeds of heroism.
And wasn't allowed to vote. And Ralph wasn't allowed to vote. He was allowed to vote.
Yeah, probably wasn't allowed to drink either. I mean, this is what American service members are, and what Ken epitomizes. And I just want to be sure that they understood, you know, what our military is made up of. So thank you for that.
One other thing. that day on May 7th, nobody told Ken to do it. Nobody pushed him, ordered him. He did it out of nothing but courage to save. He was willing to sacrifice his life to save others. And I think that being the recipient, I think there's only around 67, 68 living Medal of Honor recipients today. The majority are Vietnam veterans. Probably close to 50 are probably Vietnam veterans. And when we get guys like Ken David to do what he did, that makes all Vietnam veterans, Bill and Ralph, look good. Bill, what do you think about that?
Well, I do. And one thing hit me when you're saying, when you're talking, Ken, that your training prepared you. How important was your training in basic and the amount of time spent on various topics?
Well, the training was very intense from Fort Campbell to Fort Polk. And like I tell the people, I said, the ones that slept in class did not come home, because when a situation arose, they froze and didn't know what to do. So the training was superb, and that's why I'm here today.
And that's what's so important about training, too, because almost all the recruits have never been exposed to these kind of training situations. You don't learn it in high school, how to do these kind of things. You learn things in high school, but you don't learn how to deal with war. But and that's one thing I hear
as
from everybody that's training and practice helped a lot.
The commanding officer at Fort Benning and Ranger School said he wished he had all us Vietnam vets, because we were the best physically trained out of all the wars. So,
do you have any regrets you weren't in the Air Force?
No, he went in the Army. No. He knew what the hell he was doing.
No, I went in the Army. No. I got drafted. I did my 2 years. They wanted me to sign another 6 years to be a helicopter pilot.
Sure.
But at that time, I was only 5 foot tall. I said no.
Hey, Ken, I'd like to ask you. 50 years almost went by, and you never got the medal. What happened? Take us to the day that you got the phone call saying, hey, we got the paperwork squared away. It only took us 50 years. You'll be down at the White House to receive the medal. How did somebody call you from the Pentagon or the White House, or how did that work?
I received a phone call asking me if I'd be home on Halloween between 4 and 6 o'clock in the evening. I said, yes. I said, why? They said, well, you'll be receiving a phone call from a person from the DOD. So I knew somebody was calling me about something, so I had a tablet and paper. I had a tape recorder on pause. And then at 4:30 exactly on Halloween night, the phone rang. This is the operator at the White House. Would you accept a call from President Joe Biden? And I'm saying, okay, this is a prank call. This is Halloween. It's one of my buddies pulling my leg. Finally, I said, okay. I never took the tape machine off pause. I didn't write nothing down. And next voice I heard was President Joe Biden. And we talked for about 10 minutes, and he said other people from his staff will be calling me, which they did a half hour later. And I was like a deer in headlights. I just, huh? You know? So.
And I would imagine after that phone call, you went in your mind back thinking about the soldiers that didn't make it home in that battle. That. A lot of them did, because you saved you. Listen, we have somebody's dying. He called me in the middle of the night. He says, you got Ken on. You got to let me on to say hello to him. Is that caller on the phone now?
Yes.
Caller, are you with us?
Yes, Joseph, I'm on the phone.
And what is your
I'm
name?
Here
and what are you? Oh, this is Father Jim Drucker from WWDB, Rock and Roll Reveille in Philadelphia, heard every Saturday from 4 to 5. And, Father, you introduced me to Ken David about a month ago.
I spent a month in Ohio having my car worked on at a dealership with a man who's a very close friend of mine, Michael Claiborne, a wonderful man and a benefactor, and just really super. And I had two parishes there back in the late 90s while I was the VA Catholic chaplain in Cleveland to get my feet into the VA system as a Catholic chaplain. The only opening at the time when I came back from Desert Storm was in Cleveland. It was 6 days a week. So it was 3-3 or 4-2 or 2-4. I drove 90 miles one way to serve our veterans in Cleveland. And I had the parish in Hermitage, Pennsylvania, on the western, almost just crossed the border to Ohio. And I had a parish in Newton Falls. And I was also the chaplain at the VA in Cleveland and Brecksville, which at the time was the largest for PTSD and for psychiatry and psychology for veterans in need in those areas. And then I went down to Chillicothe and eventually went to Lebanon. So I spent a week this past month in Ohio seeing a lot of friends, political friends, priest friends, veteran friends, and one day I'm at Panera Bread, and a friend of mine, I'm dropping names here, owns 350 Panera Bread, Sammy Cavelli. So I stop at his beginning shop in Panera Bread in Warren, Ohio, and I see two veterans in their regalia, their leather jacket. I said, I got to go and see these two bikers. Anyway, they were dressed to the hilt wonderfully. So I walked over, introduced myself. As you know, I'm so quiet and shy. And the one gentleman was Bobby Marino, Robert, who was also I believe Vietnam, but I know he's a veteran, and Kenneth, and we got talking, and lo and behold, I had found out that he was a Medal of Honor recipient. I believe I kissed his hand and welcomed him home and thanked him for his service and shared a little bit about my life. And then we were discussing possibly having on my show soon. Matter of fact, he'll be on my show on March 28th, 4 to 5 p.m. when I go back on the air. We're being preempted for the next few Saturdays due to hockey and World Cup soccer games. So, yes, he's a wonderful man and a true hero.
And you called me from the restaurant, and I'm talking to Ken like I'm talking to anybody else. And I says, all right, Ken, what's your claim to fame? And I said, I'm a Medal of Honor recipient. Didn't I feel like a smack the butt? But it's just such an honor to have you on. Did you think about the medal much during the years that you didn't receive it?
No, they gave me the Distinguished Service Cross
first,
May, June, July, 6 months later, and 30 days before I got out of the Army, and people didn't know who I was or what I had with that for 15 years, and then when they did find out, they wanted me to talk about that experience.
But
so it's
Ken, am I safe saying
then,
that?
Go ahead.
On the being acknowledged, whether it's you received the medal in the White House, or whether it's people don't call you as much for the Distinguished Service Cross, the Navy Cross, or the Air Force Cross, like they do with the Medal of Honor. Is it true that the Medal of Honor
Correct.
Changes your life?
Yes. Yeah, oh yes, yes. And I told my friends back here, if you see me changing, just smack me back the head or call Father Jim and let him smack me. So, I'm still the same old person. I told the Pentagon on a group call that I'm not into this honor and glory they're bestowing upon me. And they told me, Mr. David, smile. Shut up and say thank you. I say thank you.
You know, we got to get to a break, but Ken, we want to keep you over for a few more minutes on the other side. Father, we're going to let you
sure.
go because we got to bring someone else up. But Ken, I want to ask you a question. If you go into a supermarket and you buy a 5-pound bag of potatoes, you know how much it weighs, correct?
Correct.
if you go and you buy a 5-pound chuck roast, you know what it weighs, don't you?
Yes.
What does the metal weigh?
Extremely, extremely heavy. It comes with a lot of responsibility for the American people. Like Sammy Davis told me, we are only the custodians of the medal. The Medal of Honor belongs to all of you good people out there, so we can have the freedom we have and be able to do what we're doing today.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Question, Ken, real quick. Are you from Warren, Ohio now?
Gerard. I live in Gerard.
I had a good friend in Warren, Ohio, Bob Gwynn. You wouldn't happen to know him, would you? He's a Marine Corps Vietnam veteran.
Bob didn't know any Marines,
no.
Bill.
No. maybe in one of your posts or chapters.
No Air Force guys, you know.
Here we go.
You know.
just give him the shot.
Bob's very proud Army guy, you know? Yeah. You know, the guys don't have to be jealous, you know, because he's not a Marine or not an Air Force guy.
I'm just
guy.
Trying to identify him.
Listen, we got to go to a fast break. Stay with us, Ken. Father, I'll talk to you later. And the Welcome Home show is going to be on Father Jim's show April 4th in Philadelphia. Am I correct, Father?
Absolutely. I welcome you, Joe, and I'm hoping that Jerry Tempesta will join us as well. And if Ralph's free, maybe he can come and join us as well.
But I don't know if we can bring Ralph to Jerry because they let the show get out of hand. They don't follow the script. You know? We got to, you know, I don't know. Well, and we got to get Bob Riley. Listen, you're listening to the Welcome Home show. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everybody. This coming Wednesday, March 18th, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., CVAC and the Cape May County Chamber of Commerce Veterans Affairs Committee will be conducting a Veterans Benefit and Health Fair. This is meant for veterans, spouses, children, grandparents of the current veterans, employers, anybody wants to know more about how to help and deal with veterans. It'll be at the Ocean City Civic Center, 500 Boardwalk, plenty of free parking. There'll be food there. Everything is free, no cost. So it's going to be a real nice event, again, from 9 to 2 at the Cape May County Civic Center in Ocean City. Ken, one question. I noted in your bio that you were an Eagle Scout.
Yes.
How did that prepare you for Army life? And the preparation?
The outdoor stuff. I basically was just a refresher course in the survival and orientation and maps and compasses, so it helped me out a lot. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, when I said earlier that high school doesn't necessarily prepare you for the Army, in my case, I was a Boy Scout, never quite made Eagle Scout, but it did prepare you for how to live out in the field by yourself with limited supervision, how to, you know, make sure you had enough food and supplies. And it gave
you special, how do you want to say it, principles of life
right.
to live by, too.
Yeah. I'll tell you,
and how to take care of your friends and your fellow scouts.
I'll tell you what prepared me, Ralph and Ken and Bill. I had the German nuns at St. Henry's that when I sat in my desk, they all looked like they were 9 foot tall. They beat the hell out of me every day. And basic training, when I got through basic training at Fort Gordon, I asked them, when's basic training start? Because the nuns that taught me the discipline and learning and whatever, that was my best training of going to Vietnam. But Ken, I want to introduce you to a lady. Curry McCoy started Arkansas Flag and Banner Company in 1975, and I think if my memory corrects me, she works for the Betsy Ross Flag Company, selling flags door to door. Over the next 50 years, grew her business from a one-woman show to a multi-million-dollar distributor, retailer, manufacturer in flags and banners. At the turn of the century, this humble business went national as American Flag and Banner Company. She's a good friend of Annan Flag Company. And, Curry, we want to say welcome to the Welcome Home Show.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
And before we go anywhere, we've got Ralph Galadio, and he's an Air Force guy. That doesn't mean a lot. You don't make any Air Force flags or Marine flags, do you?
Oh, yeah, we sell them all.
You should make Army flags. You got to concentrate on the Army flag. And we got Bill Davenport and Ralph are our partners. Ralph is a prisoner of war, and I'm sure you've made many of them flags. Air Force, and Bill's a Marine Vietnam veteran. And we have on Mr. David, I don't like calling him Ken, Kenneth David, who's a recent Medal of Honor recipient. So tell us how important Curry, we all know what the flag means to us, Ken, Bill, Ralph, myself. Why did you get in the flag business?
So, you know, I like the way all these vets always like to say they come from a school of hard knocks. And even though I'm not a veteran of any kind, my father was a POW. A prisoner of war during World War II. He was in Austria.
Curry. That makes you a veteran.
Oh, that does.
And I'm sure everybody would agree that's on this phone call. That makes you a veteran. Go ahead.
So, you know, I come from a family of hardworking, you know, the Greatest Generation. And I graduated from high school in 1972, kind of before they had diagnosed people with dyslexic. I think a lot of us really successful entrepreneurs were probably dyslexic and had little learning disabilities in school. And so you begin to find other ways to be successful. And I tried to go to college and, you know, wasn't very good at it. I tried hard, but it wasn't the right fit for me. And I don't think it's the right fit for everybody. So I ended up at a Botech school in Dallas, Texas, a one-year school where you learned everything in class. There wasn't a lot of out-of-classroom reading. And so I did really well, and I got my confidence up. I'm 18 or 19 years old, and I mean, many of you are going to remember the recession of 1974 when gas lines were around the block, and I think Jimmy Carter was in office, and it was a really big
interest rates were at 18% to buy a home.
Yes, I come out of my Botech school with a piece of paper to be a buyer for a large department store, and of course retail is, you know, defunct at the time. Nobody's buying clothes or shopping much because we're in a major recession, and so I end up having to get a job, any kind of job I can find, which is what I like to think about all of us School of Hard Knocks people. We just do what we have to do to make money and make a living. And so I took a job selling flags for a company in Dallas, Texas called Betsy Ross Flag Girls. They're still in business today. It's a second generation company. Actually, I think the grandson's even starting to work there. So it's a third generation company, which a lot of us are in the flag business. We're real family. Many of us are family owned, and I am still friends with those people to this day. But I was in Dallas, Texas, and I am from Little Rock, Arkansas. And so I'm working for Betsy Ross Flag Girls in Dallas, Texas, and I'm homesick, and I come home to see my brother get married and find out that there is nobody selling flags in Arkansas to speak of. I call the Secretary of State's office. I call the school board. They're all buying out of state. You know, Arkansas was very, very small back then. It's still not large, but it was really small back then. So I came home, printed up business cards, found a supplier of flags, and started selling flags door to door with a few flags in the trunk of my car, because back then you could walk in and actually talk to people. You could walk in and say, "Hello, I sell flags. I'd like to talk to your purchasing agent. Is he here?" And they'd say, "Sure, he's right here in the back." So that's how I started.
Curry, how big have you now? You have a flag company in Florida.
Yes.
And of course,
during COVID, pandemic, a lot of companies that did not have an internet presence, like flag companies that were more walk-in type of businesses, they were really struggling because, you know, everyone was staying indoors. And so there was a lot of opportunity for some of us who did have a large internet presence. I was the first flag company online in the world in 1995.
Wait a minute, Corrine, let me say something about how great this Ken and Ralph and Bill, how good this lady is. She either sold the company her flags in Florida, or she had a relationship with them, and she found out they have about 15 or 20 employees, small flag company in Florida. She's in Arkansas, and she finds out that they're closing the flag company down, and they're going to put those people out of work. What did you do with that flag company, Curry?
I kept them in business. I'm in Florida right now. They're a great group of people. There are 12 to 15 first-generation immigrants that have worked for this lady that I have become friends with that I bought the flag company from. And she was very concerned about shutting her business down and these people that had worked for her for 20 years. I mean, she'd been in some of their weddings, you know. So I fit what she wanted. She wanted somebody who was going to keep it going and keep her employees going. And she, I was down there last week working, and here came in the old owner to see all of her old employees, and we had a grand old time.
Curry, if I can ask, how big is your flag company in Arkansas?
You mean the dollar-wise or?
Well, I don't want to infringe upon it.
Oh, okay, I don't if you care. Want to tell, if you know how much. So I started my business on $400 selling flags door-to-door.
So what are you doing now? What are you doing now? $4,000? What'd you do last year?
So today we sell $6 million. Much of it is on the internet, but we still have a walk-in store in Little Rock, and we still have a walk-in store in North Miami. So we still have sticks and bricks, but we do a large internet business.
Isn't that fabulous? Do you have any questions that you would like to ask Ken or Ralph or Bill? Do you have any questions you'd like to ask Curry?
I just want to say thanks, guys. I deal with vets all of the time, and I think this is a really interesting thing about the flag that a lot of people don't realize, that since you guys are all veterans. Did you remember the Confederate hullabaloo that happened a few years ago when everybody was upset about the Confederate flag?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm in the South. We sell the Confederate flag. We always had. It's always been a popular flag. It's a great design. But I want to say this about the Confederate flag, because people are very confused. I got a lot of pressure to quit selling it, and I really thought long and hard about it, because the Confederate flag as we know it is not the flag of the Confederacy. The flag of the Confederacy is the Bonnie Blue. If you remember, Rhett Tuckler named his daughter Bonnie after the Bonnie Blue flag. The Confederate flag is a blue flag with a big white star. The Confederate flag that everybody wanted me to quit selling is a veteran's flag. It was a flag that was carried into battle by regiment, and it was adopted from a lot of flags by the sons and daughters of the Confederacy after the war to commemorate the war. It's the POW flag, basically, of the Confederacy. That's why you see it at grave sites everywhere. It is not the flag of the national flag of the Confederacy. That's a confusion a lot of people have about that flag that I think is really interesting for your listeners. I finally did end up selling it because I realized it's taken on a life of its own, and it's lost its original meaning. But flags are very, very emotional, as you said when I came on. You know, I get love letters about flags, and I get hate mail about flags. And that's just one of those that I eventually had to quit offering. But I do want people to understand why it was a hard problem for a lot of people to give it up. And just interesting folklore.
Well, I'd like to share with Ken with everyone, but our show, Ralph, Bill, and I are involved with North Wildwood, Elks, number 1896 is their number. And this May 22nd, Ken and Curry, we will be unfolding probably close to 300 casket flags alongside the Vietnam Wall that Bill was part of building, I guess, around 15 years ago. It's got all 58,000, 59,000 names on it now. And we will go alongside the Vietnam Wall, cross the street, up the ramps to the boardwalk. And then we'll go about 20 football fields of open casket flags. We will have the sun's your flag. I don't know if you heard about that one, Ken, the one that's traveling around the world. It visited the 26 veteran cemeteries and in 10 countries.
I haven't heard that.
Now it's back in the United States. That will be flying behind the Vietnam Wall, and I'm pretty sure we're going to have the original POW MIA flag made by Mary Helen Huff. Her daughter Susie is going to bring it, her and her husband, and we're going to fly that. And Ken, the flag's pretty important to you, isn't it?
Absolutely. Mine's flying right now.
You know, and your medal, the 13 stars that go around your congressional medal, indicates the original 13 colonies.
Correct.
So your life goes from one day, Ken, to a normal life. And I'm not downplaying the Distinguished Service Medal, but it does not get the attention. And I got to be really honest with you. I've read a lot of reports on Distinguished Service Medals, Navy courses, Air Force courses, and I can't tell the difference between a Distinguished Service Cross and a citation that's given on a Medal of Honor. Can you see a difference in your Silver Star citation and your Medal of Honor citation? Are they the same?
I don't have a Silver Star, but
I'm not Silver Star.
They're distinguished service. They're awarded much differently. Yes.
What made?
And a lot of the awards should have been higher than what they are. So
why is that so difficult, Ken, to honor? I mean, why is that so? I mean, even Iraq, Afghanistan. We only have a handful of Medal of Honor recipients. I just find it hard to believe that there wasn't more bravery than we awarded medals for.
Well, there was more bravery, but in my case, my lieutenant got killed and my captain got killed, and they would have been the ones that really advocated it, even though all the paperwork was there. And it's just, and then, you know, the people in the rear. Every time I talked on the radio, somebody wrote something down in the Daily Journal. And, you know, the communication back then was, it was far and in between, let's say. Not like it is today, so. But I just wish a lot more people that were in Vietnam got more awards. Some of them did exactly what I did, and they got nothing.
Yeah,
so.
And Ken, I'm working on two right now in New Jersey. Young black men, one in the Army, one in the Marine Corps. They jumped on a grenade and both died, and neither one was given the Medal of Honor. So we're working.
Yeah, why can't they award those posthumously to everybody? Well,
they can be. They just got to get up. Listen,
they need advocates.
Yeah, we only have a minute left. Let me correct you one thing on that, Mr. David. Every veteran that was in Vietnam that didn't get a medal, that deserved one, or they didn't get the high enough medal, by you getting that medal, it's like getting it for all of us. Ralph, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I want to go back to Ken's words where, you know, he pretty much said it all. You know, he's a custodian of this for the American people. And when he talks about it, a lot of it is us and we and American people. You very rarely hear a Medal of Honor recipient say, I. And that's why they distinguish themselves. That's why they're special people, because they know what the medal means, not just to them, but to their fellow troops and the American public. So congrats on that, buddy.
Well, you know, Curry, thank you for taking a few minutes out. If I'm ever in Arkansas, I'm going to stop and buy a flag. Ken, if I'm ever in Ohio, I hope it's not at the same time as Father Jim. And we just want to thank you, and you're welcome at our home anytime you come to the Jersey Shore.
Can the flag lady say her website?
Yeah, give your website, Curry.
It's pretty simple. It's flagandbanner.com. FLAGANDBANNER, flagandbanner.com. You know, nobody I don't believe anybody really, or at least I don't feel like many of the wars are really, you know, welcomed, whether they were whatever the, you know, the Vietnam War, the Desert Storm, the Confederate Wars, they're all, but the people that fought in them are heroes, and they fought, you know, with honor, and they did their duty, whether they agreed with the war or not, you know. So I really appreciate you guys.
Listen, God bless everyone. You know, Ken, you're in our prayers. We couldn't have a better representative from Vietnam. You had a lot of rest, Ken. You had 50 years waiting to put that medal to be put around your neck that you so wellly deserved. Wear it in health, and wear it, please, bragging about how great our Vietnam veterans were, and we should never forget them. We should never forget them. So, God bless Ken, Bill, Curry, and Ralph, and we hope to talk to you next week.
Those who move mountains, here's to the miracles they make us see. Here's to all brothers. Heroes, those who move mountains, here's to the miracles they make us see.